Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to Mets 360 here on Blog Talk Radio. I'm your host, Brian Jorah, and they did it to me again. They had my North Carolina State Wolfpack play a 9 o'clock game. We're coming down to the wire. They're playing Syracuse. State leads by 5 with the ball, and I know you don't want to hear a play-by-play, so let's bring on our guest tonight, and that's Dave Jordan from the Hardball Times. He's also the co-author of the tremendous book, Fastball John. Dave, welcome back to the show.
Oh, Brian, thank you so much for having me back on. It's always a pleasure to hang out, even if things get a little dicey at the end of this Hoops game.
Oh, well, I think the good guys are going to pull it out. But let's switch over to the Mets. And, one of the big stories here in early spring training is Mickey Callaway. Of course, he's getting a lot of attention being the new skipper and all. And he's talking big, and he's saying that the talent is there, and if the Mets don't succeed, it will be his fault. And I guess what I want to know from you is this the right way to go with this particular fan base, which I don't know. I guess I would describe as a kind of a fragile fan base. Is it good to build up hopes like that?
Well, it has had more than their fair share of victory being pulled from the jaws of defeat, or the other way around, defeat being pulled from the jaws of victory. But I feel like accountability is huge. He's saying all the right things. I think part of the reason Terry Collins didn't get as much guff from the Mets fan base as he probably deserved. So I think if you go back, most Mets managers have been accountable. If anything, perhaps Willie Randolph may have scoffed once or twice with reporters who tried to pin specific failures on him. But even Jerry Manuel took the heat graciously and like a pro. If anything, I think Mets fans expect their manager to take responsibility for team woes. That's kind of like their baseline expectation. And I think you definitely want your manager puffing his chest up in early February. Snarky writers love taking pot shots when players say things like, I'm in the best shape of my life. It's the ultimate, March cliche. But I truly believe the mental aspect in sports is extremely underrated. And with all the clever, savvy, and educated folks in the media community, they can spot weakness a mile away. So you really have to really have your chest out front and be speaking in such bold terms. It's the only way to go, especially at this stage of the game.
Now, you mentioned some kind of thing about mentality, and I think that we certainly need to see that winning mentality, and we're not going to back down. So I'm glad to see Callaway saying the things that he's saying. But, one thing we have to worry about is how healthy everyone's going to be. But let's for a second be really optimistic and assume that everyone is going to be healthy, particularly in regards to the starting rotation. So if all of the pitchers who they have who've started a game for them last year are healthy and none of them has a particularly awful spring, who do you expect to be the five guys in the rotation in April for the Mets?
Well, obviously, DeGrom is right up there, and Thor falls, again, the assumption that there's health there. He'll be at the top of the rotation. Mats, you have to have a lefty in there somewhere, and the Mets are really pulling for him and hoping he's going to be able to at least have one healthy season. And the Met fans, the wonderful thing about the Met fans, and this is kind of why they – going to the infield a second, why they hold out hope for David Wright is because they really pull for their homegrown players. And then that's the wonderful thing I've always – the number one wonderful thing I've noticed about Met fans is that they love their homegrown players. They love David Wright to pieces. And it's killing all of us to see him going through this. And I think we all know how this is going to end, and it's probably going to end pretty soon. But, you know, to get back to pitching, you're looking at Thor, you're looking at DeGrom, you're looking at Mats, you're looking at Harvey and Wheeler. Now, you have to have some belief that Scott Boras has hypnotized Harvey into thinking he can be at least 50% of what he once was. He has to be, or else he's not getting a payday. And, you know, again, there's a lot of writers who think young players shouldn't sign extensions because they're leaving money on the table. And for non-hurlers, he could probably talk me into that argument. But look at Harvey. After 2015, there were dollar signs in Boris' eyes waiting for the end of this season and the end of and his ability to enjoy free agency. Maybe if he was a little smarter and knew Harvey better, he gives the Mets an extra 2 years, sets his client up for life, and then gets a Darvish-style contract in his age 31 season. Boris clearly overplayed his hand here. And as for Wheeler, you know, this is obviously his last chance as well. I've always been curious to see what Zach Wheeler, the eighth inning guy, looks like. Still almost a strikeout per inning, but smarter fans I talk to, college-level scouts tell me he still has control issues. A 150 whip is just not going to get it done in the big leagues. Ultimately, it's Syndergaard, DeGrom, Mats, Harvey, Wheeler, with Lugo and Gesellman waiting in the wings.
Now, a couple of things there that you said that I want to respond to. I mean, you were talking about Boris maybe missing a chance to get an extension for Harvey, and I don't know if that's fair to single out Boris there, because I don't think any agent in that particular situation would have advised their client to sign away free agency there. So I don't know if that's fair to count as a black mark against Boris. And I have to agree with the scouts that you talked to that talked about Wheeler, because he's got such difficulty getting started in games, and he's the master of the 25 or 30 pitch first inning. And I don't know if that necessarily translates itself well to the bullpen. Maybe if he just came on and said, all right, well, screw it. The only thing I'm going to do is I'm going to throw gas, you know, and try to throw every pitch 98, 99 miles an hour. And maybe he can get away with that and improve his control somewhat. But that seems a little bit of a wishful thinking to me.
Yeah, well, I guess wishful thinking is what spring training is all about, you know, and that would be the hope there. You know, I think that I have some different thinking than what most agents do. And I think in 2018, there is an expectation that pitchers will get hurt. And I think, and I believe this, that certain pitchers, in Harvey's case, he's a pretty fragile pitcher. And for him, after that season, the Mets might have been willing to give him an extra year. That's an extra $7 million, $8 million, $9 million in his pocket that he's probably not going to get now unless he has a miraculous recovery. And the way I look at things like that, and especially for pitchers, if you have an opportunity to get an extension, you know, if you're a young pitcher, you know, like with Kershaw, he had his extension, and then he's going to be a free agent very shortly in the next few years. So I think that if you can get a little extra money in your pocket, you do it.
All right, well, let's talk about a guy who's got a whole lot of money in his pocket already, and that's Adrian Gonzalez, who I think has something like a $20 million contract. But he's been with three different teams this year alone, and the Mets have him for minimum wage, as the Braves are responsible for the lion's share of his contract. How do you see the first base shaking out for the Mets this year with Gonzalez and Dom Smith?
I absolutely love this move. It's like Reyes 2 years ago. It's a distressed purchase. There's no financial risk at all, and I adore the move. I adore the thinking. It doesn't hurt to see another team is picking up the tab. I think we'll know by the end of spring training if there's anything left in the tank with Gonzalez. I will say this. His splits from 2017 are pretty ugly. Batted .221 away from Chavez Ravine, and then .191 versus Southpaws. What does look interesting is his small sample of pinch hitting. 4-for-11 with 3 walks. It is a small sample, but I think that bodes well for what his job description could be at this point. You know, he was a fantastic first baseman at one time. I would hope that Alderson conveyed to him that this role was as much an advisory role to Dominic Smith as a participatory role for himself. That the Mets said basically, look, you can win this job out of spring training, but part of your job is to mentor this kid because he is our first baseman in 2019. I definitely think the Mets need him to mentor Dom Smith. Gonzalez is most likely not making the Hall of Fame, but 14-year vets with 130 OPS plus and 300 home runs, you know, he may not be headed to Cooperstown, but he certainly doesn't have to buy a ticket. I love the signing.
Gonzalez was a fabulous player, as you note, for a number of years, but I have to say I really, really don't like the trajectory. In 2015, he was a good player. In 2016, he was a below-average player. And then last year, he was awful. And I just have a big concern that we see a giant fork sticking out of his back. I think he's done. I think that any at-bats he gets during the regular season are ones that are going to be taken away from Dom Smith. And I want to say for the record that I'm against this signing. I don't see anything good coming out of it. I think it's 1990 Keith Hernandez in Cleveland all over again.
Yeah, it really could. It could be Bobby Abreu with the Mets as well, but it also could be Gary Sheffield. You don't know with these things when you have he's not a Hall of Famer, as I mentioned, but he's Hall of Fame caliber. And when you have a Hall of Fame caliber guy, these guys got to where they were with their confidence in themselves and their ego. And I don't think guys like that want to show themselves out the door with a 150 average. And maybe there's lightning in a bottle. And for what he could possibly teach and tutor Dom Smith at first base, the Mets could use some more defense in their infield. So I think in that sense, even if he's gone by June, if he can impart some wisdom on this kid, then I think the move is worth it.
Now, you mentioned just a second ago Jose Reyes, so I'd like to talk about him for a second. And I want to know, you know, you go into the season thinking that Asdrubal Cabrera is the second baseman and that Jose Reyes is the primary backup at short, second, and probably even third base. But are you confident that at this point in time that Asdrubal Cabrera is a better player than Jose Reyes?
Some of their numbers sure do match up, right? I mean, you made a really excellent observation here. You know, the problem is neither one of them are impressing anyone with the glove. You know, but you look at their batting statistics and what they put up last year. You know, Reyes had 15 home runs. Cabrera had 14. Reyes had 58 RBIs. Cabrera had 59. You know, Cabrera had 134 hits. Reyes had 123. Reyes had 25 doubles and 7 triples. And Cabrera had 32 doubles and no triples. So it's really, their numbers are very, very similar. You know, but the problem is Cabrera still manages to get on base at a .350 on-base percentage. Reyes simply doesn't get on base enough, which is a shame because he's still stealing bases at an 80% rate, which, you know, for a 34-year-old, that's still very impressive. Unfortunately, he's become a liability with the glove. And Cabrera's not much better. You know, but you certainly make a solid observation how close their numbers are, though. But you know what? I would like T.J. Rivera to get a long, long look this spring.
Yeah, I'd be real curious to see what kind of time frame we're looking at before Rivera is able to come back, because the guy's done nothing but hit when he's been given a chance in the majors.
304 average in the two, cups of coffee with the Mets. It's, I think, you know, that's an idea that we were looking at. And it's really, you know, the organization this decade, when considering Justin Turner and Daniel Murphy, hasn't exactly established a savvy track record for evaluating middle infield talent and its long-term prospects. So, I would like to see what he has to offer at this point.
All right, well, let's switch over and talk about the pitching again. This time we'll talk about the bullpen, and Mickey Callaway has come out and said that the team won't necessarily have a set closer. And I don't know, that strikes me as a little odd. I mean, I'm not opposed to the idea, but it strikes me as odd. And I just want to know what you think about that declaration by Callaway.
You know, it's funny. He's definitely not, as we mentioned, a conventional choice. But if I recall, and I know you remember this too, back in the early 80s, the Mets, you know, Frank Cashin made a very unconventional choice. He named Davey Johnson his manager. And all the guy had was a couple years of managing in the Mets organization. And all that Davey Johnson talked about that spring was his computer and the stats and how he looked at everything. And it was a different perspective. And I thought I guess, as impressed as a 14-year-old eighth grader can be, I was impressed. You know, as you know, talking about Callaway, in bullpen by committee, it's worked before, you know, most notably the 85 Cardinals. You know, here's something that gives me a little pause. I'm curious about, is he providing cover for Familia to give him time to settle back into the role without explicitly saying that? Excuse me. That could be the case as well. And as we've seen, this is an innovative guy. He did wonders for the Cleveland pitching staff. I mean, I like that Alderson, as advanced as Sandy is at this stage in his career, this is a ballsy hire. It's certainly an out-of-the-box thought. You like to see that, you know. You don't want to just see him hiring Bob Guerin. You don't want to see that. You want to see some kind of creativity. In my view, I'm on your wavelength. I would be surprised if Familia is not back in his role by June, and if we're no longer talking about this by the end of May.
The curious thing, what really makes this interesting to me, is the acquisition last year of Ramos, who of course has been the closer for the Marlins. So it's not like they're going into this with guys who maybe have a save here or a save there. Ramos, you would think, would be very comfortable in the ninth inning. So they've got two guys who seem to be have what it takes to be the closer. And the old saying is, if you have two quarterbacks, you have none. And I'm just a tiny bit concerned that maybe the same thing will develop here. But, you know, like you said, it's not the managing by numbers, which we've seen way too much of the past 7 years. So I'm a little bit worried, but I'm willing to follow Callaway on this one.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to see what Ramos really has to offer. It's, you know, kind of, again, the mental aspect of pitching with the Marlins and with everything was hovering over the team this year. His numbers weren't that great. I mean, you're looking at his fielding independent pitching was close to 4, which is not good at all. He had an ERA of 3.63 for a reliever, is not great, only 20 saves. And, you know, his strikeout rate was pretty good, but he did give up a lot of hits. I think it's, at some point, you know, Callaway wants to see what he has with Familia, and if Familia can be back on his toes, he'll be back on his toes by mid-May or so, and you're looking at Ramos as a 7th or 8th inning guy. We'll see.
All right, well, something has developed here early in spring training that gave me a chuckle, and that was the news that the Mets were going to have Wilmer Flores working out in the outfield. And I want to know from you, is Flores in the outfield, is this a horrible idea? Or is this the worst idea ever?
You know what? Are they trying to turn him into a Lee Lacy-like super sub? And excuse the old-aged reference there. You know, or a Ben Zobrist-type guy. I'm so afraid that Flores ends up as, like, the next Jeff Kent. You know, Kent's OPS Plus was, you know, with the Mets is very similar to what Flores has put up in the last couple of years. You know, I know he had, like, 510 plate appearances a couple of years back. I'd like to see him at some position and just sitting there and see what he can do. I just have a feeling that we're going to see him in Colorado somewhere or in Cleveland or even in Boston or something and putting up great numbers. I mean, we know he has that clutch twinkle in his eye that he can hit when the chips are down. I don't know if he's going to get lost in the mix here because I know that Sandy really wants to see Brandon Nimmo succeed. He loves his on-base percentage. You know, I don't know how effective it's going to be to have two players, Reyes and Flores, who can play 6 positions on the bench. I don't know.
Well, you know, I think that the nicest thing that the Mets could do would be to trade Flores to somewhere where he could be the DH that he was meant to be. The idea of a guy who has no footwork skills whatsoever in the infield and who doesn't have an arm that can make the throw from third base is somehow going to survive in the outfield, that just seems like a unbelievably bad idea for me. But, you know, I'm almost wondering if it's this is one of the ways where the new manager gives himself a laugh, throwing a guy out into a position that he has absolutely no plans whatsoever to play him just to give the press something to write about.
That's very true. And you know what else I think? I think that the organization is aware that the fans adore this guy. Everybody loves Wilmer Flores, and they want to see it work out. They're trying to figure out some way to make the square peg fit into the round hole. I don't know if that's going to happen, but I know that it does look to me that they're trying to do whatever they can to kind of keep him in the mix before, you know, figuring out by the end of the year, God, we don't want to get rid of this guy. He's almost a fan favorite, but we're going to have to do something. So.
All right. Well, the Mets have no shortages of guys coming back from injury, and they've also got a few new free agents in the mix. So I'm curious to find out from you, who are you most interested to see perform this year in spring training and why?
I think we talked about Rivera. Hopefully he'll be around in the spring to show us what he can do. Gonzalez, I mean, you know what it is? When I was a big baseball card collector, there was always these, they would have the set that came out in February and March, and then in August they'd have the traded set. And I love the traded sets because it had all the traded players and whatnot and veterans on new teams and everything. And I kind of have a soft spot for that as well as the homegrown guys. I really want to see Gonzalez work out. I really want to see Matt Harvey, you know, not throw up a 6 ERA. You know, it's just you don't want to see a 29-year-old guy whose career is not at all where it was supposed to be. And, you know, as much hubris and almost schadenfreude as Harvey made people feel about him, at this point he's the comeback kid, and you want to see him succeed, even if that means, you know, Eric Davis style, he comes, or Steve Avery comes back as a monster year and leaves. You know, you want to see him do well, and so I'm looking forward to seeing what kind of stuff he has left on his fastball, or is he learning how to get guys out in other ways.
All right, well, we've reached the part of the show where we give each other our crazy predictions. I'll give you mine, and then I ask you to comment on it, and you tell me if you think if it's crazy or not, and then you'll give me your crazy prediction. So my crazy prediction lends itself a little bit to what we talked on briefly earlier in the show, and that's Matt Harvey and his contract. My crazy prediction this week is that the Mets are going to sign Matt Harvey to a contract extension before he becomes a free agent. So how crazy is that?
I think that's pretty out of bounds, man. I don't know.
Woo-hoo!
Yeah, no. I don't know if there's any love lost between these guys. I haven't heard anything or any rumblings or anything. If they're, you know, still a match made in heaven. If they're still, if there's any kind of relationship there. I think it's weird. If he doesn't succeed, I'm not sure he's still around in 2019. If he does succeed, he's gone. But. That's pretty off the wall, I think. But, yeah, you know, I hope he succeeds. Well,
each week I give a crazy prediction, or what I think is a crazy prediction, and most times I offer it up to the guest, and the guest goes, nah, I don't think that's crazy. So I'm glad that you think that what I give this week is crazy. All right, hit me with yours.
At Harvey, he's just like, he got so many people annoyed. It'd be a great bet if it pays off, is what I'm saying.
All right, what's yours?
Mine. I think Jay Bruce is gone by August once the Mets realize that Conforto's okay and Nemo is established as an everyday center fielder and leadoff man. I can't get upset with the and I don't know if you had some thoughts here, but you know, talking about Bruce, I don't love free agents. I love guys in their contract year. I do, again, and it plays all into the mental aspect of the game, that somebody has that carrot stick in front of their face. And Bruce played like a guy last year who had that carrot stick. And granted, it wasn't as tasty as he thought it might have been. It's only $9 million a year for 3 years or whatever it was, $10 million or something. But he did get a nicer contract, and he had a good year, got a taste of the postseason. You know, I think that, you know, the Mets really want to see Conforto succeed, and he looked so much like the Mets version of Don Mattingly early in the year when he really was hitting well, and I like to think of him as that. And again, I know the Mets have an interest in seeing Nemo succeed, because again, he's also under control for a number of years, like half a decade or so, and they want to make sure that they are set in the outfield now. And that could also mean at some point maybe they deal Juan Lagares. And you know, although he'll probably stick around as Cespedes insurance. But, You know, I think that if Conforto's healthy and Nemo's doing well, I think you're going to see Bruce go elsewhere.
Well, I have to say that the idea that the Mets would trade somebody that they just signed to a 3-year contract before the first year is even completed, I have that that's crazy. So outstanding work on the crazy prediction. I like your reasoning behind it. I wish I shared your same belief that the Mets were really invested in seeing Nimmo succeed, because I think that what we've seen for the most part this offseason is almost the exact opposite of that. And I almost think that they're more curious to see what Lagares can do, given the new offseason work with the hitting coaches that turned J.D. Martinez around. So it'll be curious to see what they do while Conforto is out, how they divide up the center field duties. I mean, you would think that they might go with a platoon, but that would many more at-bats to Nimmo being the lefty swinger of the two. So it'll be curious to see how they plan to cover center field, and if they give it outright to Nimmo or give him the larger share of the platoon, then maybe you're right. But I have my doubts.
Yeah, you know, I really, again, Lagares is another one of those, you know, homegrown ball players, and you want to see them do well. And it was so great that the Mets had so many of those guys in 2015. And even that they all were around, you know, Cespedes, but it's just, it was great to see these young guys doing so well. And it would be nice to see him. It would be nice to see him out there and you know, playing just as well in the outfield as he has been historically. That would be great too. So.
All right, well, let's talk a little bit more about Jay Bruce. And then, you know, your crazy prediction was that they were going to deal him. And then, you know, even leaving aside that crazy prediction for a moment, the Mets signed Bruce for, I think it was a $339 deal, which at the time, you know, most people thought, well, that's fair, that's a good deal. But given that we're still in the middle of the slow market, do you think the Mets would like a do-over with that signing right now?
I mean, it's possible. I think that it's such a tough game, I suppose, that, you know, if you eke out $1 million against the player, is the player going to take that out on you? Is it worth, you know, is it worth that extra $1 million that you got over on him to get him in there? Is he going to be very resentful for the time that he's with you for doing that? I don't know. You know, could they probably have gotten him for, I don't know, $3-4 million less, maybe. But I think that really, you know, poisons the waters between player and management by doing that. Granted, they got very lucky with Frazier. It's a signing I endorse, and he should do well here. And more important, you know, the best aspect of that deal for me is the defense. You know, I really think that the defensive nature with their team last year, a lot of their problems were caused by defense. And if they can shore that up, you know, they're not going to be a 92 loss ball club this year if they can do that. And this is a very good start toward that. With Bruce, you know, again, maybe they could have got him for $4 or $5 million less, maybe $6 million, but, you know, it's their money, and I think it's better for the nature of the relationship between the two of them for them just to get it done.
Now, you were talking about the improved defense that we should see, and certainly the infield defense last year was a huge problem, and it should be a big upgrade starting from day one with a left side of the infield with Todd Frazier at third and Ahmed Rosario at short. And I want to talk real quickly here. We got about a minute and a half left. Ahmed Rosario, you know, that we've seen so many really good young shortstops come up in the last 4 or 5 years or so, and Is there anyone you would compare him to right now, or do you think his career is going to unfold more like Francisco Lindor or Orlando Arcia? What do you think about Rosario, and what should we expect?
Well, Lindor batted 313 at the same age as Rosario. They're both 21 years old. I'm not sure about that one. Arcia, I mean, they're very, very similar stat lines in their age 21 season, and then Arcia got a little bit better. You know, his OPS plus went up a little bit. His defense improved a little bit. He still struck out 100 times. I think the career trajectory, as it looks right now, is more Arcia than Lindor.
All right. Well, on that note, we are all out of time. I'd like to thank our guest, Dave Jordan, for dropping by. Please go out and check out his work at the Hardball Times. He did a very interesting series recently here on looking back at some of the draft years, and we'll have to get him back on the show once we complete our look at the minor league draft. And then also, if you have not read it yet, his book that he co-authored with John DeAquisto, Fastball John, is an absolutely fabulous book that you should absolutely go out and read. Thanks for being on the show tonight.
Brian, this is always awesome. Thanks, man.
All right. Thank you for tuning in. Please join us again next Wednesday night, 7 o'clock. Good night, everyone, and goodbye.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.